Hi, I'm Caroline, a yoga teacher with a special interest in menopause based in Edinburgh.
And hi, I'm Dr. Claire, a GP with a special interest in menopause based in North London.
Together, we are the Menopause Sisters, and we are here to guide and support you through your menopause journey. Hi, Claire, how are you doing? How's London?
It's good, it's rainy. How's Edinburgh?
Yeah, it hasn't stopped raining here for 3 days, so it feels very damp and very, very wet. And I know there's areas of the borders actually in floods. So quite a lot of rain in the last 36, 48 hours. I know quite a few people going to the march in London today. Do you know anyone going?
The Make Menopause Matter March, which is great movement, based down in Parliament Square today. Quite a few friends, quite a few colleagues going down. I know Dr. Louise Newson is going to be heading up the Newson Health constituent down there, and Bernard Ansbrook as well. So it's brilliant. It's all about, us working together, whether you're male or female, to really bring and highlight awareness to this, which is so important. And I know that Carolyn Harris is quite has spoken today on Radio 4 just about how, in hindsight, she realizes that she was probably perimenopausal before she, before she even knew what that was. And I think that's just quite telling, isn't it, that people, women, just don't realize that this is a thing, and that there's treatment, there's advice, there's support out there that can help.
Yeah, and I remember her saying, or I'd heard her saying recently actually, that it came to her attention even more so when she overheard a work colleague actually talking about how much she was going to have to pay for HRT. And she's an MP in Wales, or lives in Wales, and I'm in Scotland, and neither of us have to pay for our HRT. We get free prescriptions, so that sort of began to steamroll, I guess, a sense of equity and equality really around this, because it affects everyone, as we often talk about, whether that's in the workplace, in family life, at home. So yeah, it's brilliant to hear that there's lots and lots of activity in Parliament Square today, and a discussion actually in Parliament around this topic.
Yeah, and let's try and support the bill that is trying to be pushed through, that just is all about menopausal awareness and support and services for women. And just that support is great. So brilliant.
So we're really, really pleased to have Dr. Helen Douglas with us today. She's an author, editor, and advocate. And Helen spent 20 years in academia before a challenging surgical menopause at the age of 41. Helen writes on subjects society typically prefers to ignore, which includes menopause, adverse childhood experiences, and shame. Helen is also the founder of the Dignified Menopause Initiative, a co-founder at the Menopause Inclusion Collective, and a trustee and volunteer at Menopause Cafe. Helen describes herself as a slow runner, medium-paced indoor rower, and she lives in deepest Scotland with a bear called Willoughby. In her spare time, she doodles about a little blue hen called Maud. I'm kind of wishing I had a blue hen. I've got a couple of hens in my garden, Helen, which I adore. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we've sort of met or connected through a film we were part of for NHS 24. Could you tell me a little bit about how you were approached to do the film?
Yeah, absolutely. I connected with Lisa a couple of months ago, and she was pulling together a film for NHS 24, and I just thought, absolutely, why not? Because in the past I would have said no, because I like to fly under the radar screen and I'm always happy for somebody else to be up there doing it. But then it occurred to me, everybody else thinks that and nobody steps forward. And so I thought, right, this is actually the year that I start to say yes more often. And so I did. And it was my first actual outing since lockdown, other than sort of locally. And so yeah, hopped on the train and went through to Queen's Ferry and spent the day with Lisa, ran around in bright neon lycra. And it was just fantastic. Lisa is this powerhouse of enthusiasm and tenacity, and the film that she put together was just, yeah, it really blew my mind actually. And I think, I mean, Lynn with her creative artwork, and It was just positively, or not positively, it was pragmatically optimistic. That's a phrase I like to use, because I think you can have toxic positivity where, you know, you're painting a picture that's perhaps not realistic. But I thought it painted a realistic picture of a lot of the struggles that many of us go through, but also some of the lighter, brighter side of menopause, which I think it's good to focus on that as well, because it's not all doom and gloom, is it?
No, exactly. No, we often say that actually. There's, you know, we can find a positive side. And I loved what you'd said in the film about the Japanese calling it second spring, you know, that they're coming out the other side and finding light again almost. It's like coming out of the autumn winter if you have been struggling. And we acknowledge that not everybody struggles. There's plenty of women that are able to sail through their menopause journey. But for many women, it can be quite tough. And like you say, Lisa, full of energy. And what she put together was just wonderful. We'll make sure we share the link with our listeners, but there's four women, yourself included, myself included, talking about their menopause journey and being very honest. And actually, like you, Helen, I'm not one to often be that honest and that personal, especially on camera nationwide. But like you thought, actually, I've got to use my voice. I've got a voice, and I felt privileged to have that voice. And I thought it's my duty to share it, because there are many women who hopefully this will help.
Yeah, and I think what I've gathered from watching it is what we've spoken about before, Caroline, is the interesting take on the menopause, in that it isn't a one size fits all. There isn't, you know, A to Z of symptoms and you must have A, B and C before we do, you know, the next step. Actually, what it is that every woman on that video was having symptoms unique to them, which were changeable, which often left them feeling quite muddled, quite confused. But I also really, Helen, I really love the positivity of it as well, the overall feeling that it was a positive thing, because we are very keen to promote the perimenopause and menopause as being, just like you said, Caroline, that second spring, and that actually this can be, you know, the second half, the better side, you know, you can make some positive changes. So yeah, I think, well done, guys, it was great. So Helen, we were going to talk a bit about your perimenopause journey. And I know that in the video, which obviously Karen said she will share later, you spoke about how you went into a surgical menopause at the age of 41. Can you tell us a bit about the lead up to that and your decision to go through with surgery and then sort of after that, what happened?
Yeah, I mean, my decision to have surgery was really quite sudden. Mm. I'd had a difficult gynecological history leading up to the surgery. I'd had endometriosis and ovarian cysts and 6 or 7 fibroids. So life was becoming uncomfortable. And from seeing the gynae consultant to the surgery was exactly 5 weeks, which was just incredible. And I was offered various options, you know, trying perhaps a chemical menopause initially. But I just decided to go nuclear because, A, I was 41. I had never wanted children. So it wasn't an issue of, well, perhaps, you know, I would like to retain my uterus and my ovaries. And I just thought, well, what's the point of going at it piecemeal, having something done and then going back? It's just going to drag out the whole process. And rather naively, I thought I would just go and have surgery, take 6 to 8 weeks to recover, and then I would be back fighting fit as if nothing had happened. And that was really far from reality, primarily because I lacked awareness. I think that's the major thing. I really had no idea what was going on. And I bumbled through the menopause jungle for certainly the first 3 years after surgery. I wasn't using HRT. I had, again, no awareness that my issues were menopause related, because I wasn't having hot flushes and night sweats then. I was having predominantly the psychological issues. I was having the depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation. And it all came to a head sort of 3 or 4 years after surgery. And that's really when things started to turn around, when I started on HRT. I also take antidepressants. And I find those two together, they seem to smooth my mood out, and they certainly deal with the anxiety. Because I'd had issues around anxiety and depression really since my mid-teens. For me, those two, the powerful combination of HRT and antidepressants, just they tick the boxes for me. And yeah, I'm thankful that they do, because it was really quite a unpleasant time.
Thank you for sharing that. I mean, I'm sorry that it led to, you know, this the worsening of your psychological symptoms in many ways. Tell me, when you went to for surgery, you know, before you even had the surgery, or even, you know, as leaving hospital, did anyone mention the menopause to you? Was that a discussion that you'd had with anybody?
No, not at all. When I went to see my gynae surgeon, we knew one ovary was coming out. We weren't sure about the other one. So whether that's why it wasn't mentioned or not, I have no idea. But no, I left hospital with just two pieces of information or two pieces of advice, which I mentioned in the film, which were: don't lift anything heavier than a kettle of water for 6 weeks, and refrain from sex for the same duration. And that was it. Although I have to say, the healthcare I received was incredible. It was just superb. I could not fault it in any regard. I had amazing care.
I think it's really interesting, isn't it, that you're plunged into a surgical menopause, and yet these things aren't fully, you know, fully discussed, because actually we know about the long-term health implications now much more. We're much more aware of the long-term health implications now of being plunged into a surgical menopause, certainly at a younger age. Having done your research, Helen, were you sort of suddenly aware? Was this something that was slowly dawning on you that might happen or might be implicated having had your surgery?
Bizarrely enough, no. It was only the fact that I started to have a real issue with GSM and a lot of bleeding and spotting, and I'd also had a really recalcitrant issue with granulation tissue on the vaginal wall after surgery. So I kept going back and having that cauterized with silver nitrate again and again. And it was 3 years after surgery that I went for a checkup, and somebody said, I wonder if HRT might help. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's in your brain, it just light bulb comes on and you think, oh my God, yep, the hair loss, the brain fog. And yeah, within I think a fortnight of starting the HRT, the estrogen only patch, my joints didn't ache, and my gums felt better, and my skin was better. It was almost like night and day. It was that, you know, that distinctly clear.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? We should mention that amongst many of the symptoms associated with the menopause, you refer to GSM, which is the genitourinary symptoms of the menopause. And essentially that is what people talk about as being vaginal dryness and recurrent urine infections, potentially, and pain during sexual intercourse. And sometimes even urine leakage or urgency. So you need to rush to the loo to pass urine. And vaginal dryness is really underestimated, isn't it? It's really something that's not talked about enough. And we try and mention it as much as possible, but obviously that was a major symptom for you, and hot flushes and night sweats, which are often on the top of most doctors' list of symptoms, wasn't. So that's really interesting, isn't it?
Vaginal dryness for me, the confusion came because initially it didn't feel dry, or I didn't feel any dryness. I was getting, and I think this is something that Jane Lewis in her really fantastic book, Me and My Menopausal Vagina, flagged up, I was getting sort of profuse, watery, milky discharge. And so I thought, well, I'm clearly not having an issue with vaginal dryness. But of course, I now know that, you know, to look out for changes in the type of discharge that you're getting, if you're getting any, because that can be an indication of problems. Yeah.
I think I mentioned in the video, I really had suffered over the last 6 months with it, almost like a recurring thrush, and a sort of feeling of almost getting cystitis and feeling very, very sore, actually. And vaginal estrogen has been a game changer for me. I think I remember taking a photo of it and getting it, my prescription, and sending it to my sister, Dr. Claire, because it was like a sweet shop. It had just arrived and I was so excited. And it's quite amazing after even just a week, the difference.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's one of the issues that is so easily treated. And yet I find, certainly with my work with Menopause Cafe, that's the one topic that people find they really don't want to bring up. And I think it's a shame. I totally understand, because 5 years ago, there's no way I would have made a film talking about vaginal dryness. But it's really no, you know, the words and the topic, it's really no biggie. I think it's getting the words out into everyday conversation, just getting them out there that, you know, it's not a taboo subject, almost within a taboo. And it takes the power away from the words by using them, you know, appropriately and just using them sensitively in terms of the conversation we're having here. And I think that chips away, that gradually chips away at some of the stigma and the taboo and the shame around the words.
Absolutely. And it's been great through Menopause Awareness Month. And obviously it's just a month, but you feel like there's a real kind of gathering of chat and talking more about these issues, and using, like you say, Helen, the words in the context and using them more to make them less of a taboo. You mentioned the Menopause Cafe, and that was initially why I had reached out, actually, because I'd heard so much about the Menopause Cafe, you know, follow them on Twitter, love all the work they have done and are doing. What's your role there with them?
I am a volunteer and a trustee. I went along to the very, very first Menopause Cafe, which was in Perth, Scotland in 2017. And I went along as just an interested person who was having a really difficult time with their menopause. And I was just absolutely blown away by the sense of camaraderie in the coffee shop. And it was not something that I'd experienced. And hats off to Rachel Weiss and Gail Jack and Lorna Fotheringham. Those three got together and they ran the first cafe. And there was just so much feedback from that event, asking when you're going to do the next one. And so a couple more of us came on board, and it's really taken off from there. We became a charity in 2018. And by the end of this year, there will have been over 700 individual Menopause Cafe events, both online and face-to-face. The locations, I jotted them down recently: Mozambique, Mexico, Bahrain, Nairobi, Toronto, Connecticut, Republic of Ireland, and in the UK from Elgin to Exeter and Wales to Winchester. So it's fantastic to see how they really, you know, that they're spilling out all over the globe. So it's great.
We're going to take a pause there and listen to some messages from our sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. We're talking with Helen, who is part of the Menopause Cafe today. And we were just talking before the break about how the Menopause Cafes have gone global, which is incredible, because we know there's such disparity in menopause care, not only in the UK, but worldwide. I know that I saw a patient recently who lived abroad, and in order to get any hormone replacement therapy, she needed to have various ultrasound scans, bloods, biopsies. She needed to go back and have an MRI of her womb. Actually, HRT was actively discouraged for her, and it's just such a shame, isn't it? Because you know, if HRT isn't an option for you and you decide not to, there are other things that can be done, but actually you need to be kept fully informed of all the possible treatments available. And so ensuring that the Menopause Cafe gets out there and goes global is fantastic.
And we often talk about connection, don't we, Claire? And I'm sure, Helen, you must have found this in that first meeting in Perth, just being able to be amongst other people talking about similar issues. And we know we're all unique and we have our own unique set of symptoms, but being able to discuss openly or listen comfortably. And we were talking to somebody last week who had gone through menopause at 15-16, and she's now an advocate for the Daisy Trust, and she was saying a very similar thing. You know, they bring people together to be able to talk about their early menopause, and she said it was a game changer for her to be able to be connected to and surrounded by others who were going through a similar journey.
Yeah, and I think that talking about it with friends and colleagues and loved ones, you know, making those connections, but also making it a chat that you have with your family and your sons and your husbands, and you know, everybody will be affected by this. 50% of the population is going to go through this at some point in their lives, and having the awareness is so important. So Helen, tell us more about kind of your work within the cafe. What does it involve and what role do you have as part of that?
I spend the early hours of the morning when I should probably be asleep, but I'm menopausal, so I'm not, creating content, managing Twitter and Instagram, and trying to raise funds. That's something that's obviously, as a charity, that's always at the forefront of our minds. We're small and we're relatively nimble, and we have minimal operating costs, but obviously we still, you know, we still have some costs that have to be covered. So yeah, hatching grant applications and pulling those all together, you probably know that takes quite a bit of time. Mm-hmm. And last year in response to lockdown, I rolled out the online ones, and we held those once or twice a week for most of last year. And the one good, I think one of the brilliant things that lockdown brought with it was the fact it vastly increased our reach, because we adopted Zoom, and there's no barrier. And if somebody has internet connection, it doesn't matter where they are, you know, literally whether they're, we connected with somebody in Kathmandu one day, and it just makes the world a very small place. And I think that's great, because it comes back to connection, doesn't it? And it, you know, it builds connections. And yeah, it fosters this sense of togetherness. And, you know, there's always a lot of compassion when we're having these discussions. And there's an innate understanding, I think, and that's very, very powerful, because people who often come along to the events, they've probably, invariably haven't spoken about it at all, ever, to anyone. Some of them think they're going mad. They think they're alone. And those two things are the most common feedback comments that we receive when people leave the events. Thank goodness I now know I'm not alone. And thank goodness I now know I'm not going mad. And I think it's such a powerful, powerful connection being made.
We get some very similar feedback, Claire, don't we? We often do workshops together. So Claire's the doctor side of it, I'm the yoga side of it. And actually, it's finding connection. And the women often just, that's it. It's, you know, thank you so much, because they're able to find researched, well-documented information, have that connection with Claire and be able to ask some of those medical questions they might not get answers to elsewhere or easily, but also just have some time to chat amongst each other, find out what's helped them, what has helped other women, and then obviously a bit of yoga. Helen, can anyone set up a menopause cafe?
Yes, indeed they can. Indeed they can. If they head over to our website, www.menopausecafe.net, and there should be a link there to a how-to guide. Have a read of that and download the working agreement, sign that and send it off. As long as the events, they are always open to absolutely everyone without exception. They're always free and there are no speakers. So as long as you you know, you stick to those principles, then yep, anybody can run one.
Wonderful. You mentioned in some of the Zoom rooms, potentially in some of the cafes you've been part of, there have been women that perhaps have never spoken about their menopause journey ever before to anyone. And when we know that there are certain groups, whether that's around religious beliefs or ethnicity or socioeconomic reasons, that perhaps can't get information easily or perhaps don't feel they're able to open up and talk about this topic. And so actually sharing the work of the Menopause Cafe just sounds fantastic. And that leads me on to a question around, you're a co-founder of the Menopause Collective, and this really struck me when I was connecting with you over the last couple of weeks, because it's very much about equality and equity. For the diversity of menopause experiences, I think was possibly the phrase that is on the website. And this is something I feel very passionate about. I'm one of the team at Edinburgh Community Yoga, and we facilitate trauma-aware yoga and trauma-informed yoga. The idea being that we can take yoga into the community, because yoga can be a very sort of elitist activity in expensive, lovely studios. Could you tell us a little bit more around the Menopause Collective?
Yeah, the Menopause Inclusion Collective, it was the brainchild of Sarah Williams. And I joined alongside Nina Kuipers of Black Women in Menopause. Mm-hmm. And it's a collaboration of menopause activists, advocates, experts by lived experience, with an interest in advancing, as you say, equality, diversity and inclusion in the menopause movement, because we recognised that the current discourse around menopause was becoming particularly polarised. And our hashtag is Include My Menopause, because when I was looking, perhaps maybe social media or even in print media and TV, I was not seeing somebody who I could relate to. And by that, I mean someone who is autistic and, again, I mean, if we're talking about Nina Kuipers with her Black Women in Menopause movement, how representative of the average person going through menopause do we see being represented? I think it's lacking, and it's always good to ask ourselves, who are we not including? Who are we leaving out? And yeah, it's again, I mean, we're all volunteers, just a little bit crazy, I think, just with passion and drive, just to try and, I suppose, change, and also add, we had our first debate on World Menopause Day, and it was just refreshing just to see so many different faces coming together and looking at things from just completely different angles. And I think it broadens the lens. It widens the lens on menopause. And for me, it was a timely realization that perhaps some of the messages that I put out, certainly as regards maybe the content for Menopause Cafe, I would always use a particular set of images, whereas it taught me, well, hang about, who am I leaving out? So it taught me tiny lessons. So I'm certainly grateful to Sarah Williams for that. Yeah.
It's a conversation we've had quite a lot, actually. Particularly when you look at, like, say, Instagram or Facebook or any of the social media, and you know, look at the images representing perimenopause and menopause, and you can probably tell, for listeners that don't know, myself and Claire, I guess we could call ourselves mixed race or biracial. There are many different terms, but we are definitely a bit brown. And you know, this is something we noticed, actually. And when we did our first workshop together, I'd said to Claire, I think we should do something with our faces on it, because we have a privileged situation that we had an education, we both have voices we can use, but actually we don't look like the average person talking about menopause at the moment in social media, and just being aware of that. So I really resonates, actually, Helen, what you were saying. You know, who are we leaving out? That's often a question we ask, isn't it, Claire?
It is, absolutely. And I think that there's lots of, you know, the thought processes are happening about that now much more readily than perhaps they were even 2 or 3 years ago. Thinking about how you know, different ethnicities will be experiencing their symptoms, their perimenopausal symptoms differently, and how actually in some ethnic groups and in some cultures there isn't a word for the perimenopausal menopause. And certainly, you know, when I have consultations with women face to face who require a translator, we can't often talk about vaginas because the translators won't necessarily use those words. And that's obviously not all translators, but certainly for some it's a very difficult conversation to have. And to break down that barrier and to be more inclusive is really, really vital if we're going to make talking about the menopause as mainstream.
And it's something we haven't yet had a chance to explore on our show. We're still early stages, but actually, you know, looking at race, ethnicity, gender as well, and sexual orientation, that's a huge area there as well that needs to be included, that needs to be discussed within the perimenopause and menopause conversation.
And so, Helen, you also mentioned at the start, or I think maybe Caroline did, you being a founder of the Dignified Menopause.
Indeed. Crazy idea. With another powerhouse, actually, over in Nepal.
Wow.
Radha Budel is a nurse and an activist who's literally this whirlwind of energy and enthusiasm around. Her main thrust of the work is around menstruation. Mm-hmm. And Radha and I were chatting a few months ago, and I just came out with this really foolish idea of let's get together and hold a summit, because, you know, it comes back to this widening the lens. Yes, in the UK we're talking about menopause increasingly more often, but there are still great swathes of the globe where that's just simply not the case. And Radha is founder of the Dignified Menstruation Foundation, and so we borrowed, if you like, the term the dignity from that, on the basis that dignity is the right of a person to be valued and respected for their own sake. So Dignified Menopause is simply about that. It's about widening the lens. It's about recognizing that we need more of an emphasis on womb to tomb, looking at the entirety of the menstrual journey. So from puberty to menopause, because I think at the moment there's this emphasis quite rightly on childbirth. But then on the other end of the spectrum, there's a vacuum, or there always has been a vacuum. So we're on the 8th of December, which is International Dignified Menstruation Day, we are hosting. Mm-hmm. We've called it a smart summit. It's just a load of activists getting together over Zoom. And just to highlight how menopause is perhaps dealt with, perceived, received in different parts of the world. So we've got a speaker from the United Arab Emirates. We have a speaker from Uganda, which I'm really excited about, and Indonesia and the USA. So just to sort of, you know, inject a little globalization to the menopause debate.
And how are these speakers, how are these people found? Are these people that come forward and want to sort of discuss? I'm just intrigued, because I think it's amazing you're getting these people from all around the world to come together and have this chat, which is such a positive thing, isn't it?
I find it's once you ask people about it, I find they want to talk about it. Mm. And certainly as regards perhaps the contacts in Indonesia and Nepal and the globalized South, Radha obviously has many contacts. She runs the Radha Budel Foundation, as well as the Global South Coalition for Dignified Menstruation. And some of her contacts have obviously come forward, because it's a really great platform for them to try and get their message out, because I think perhaps they've been speaking about it, but they can't get their message out. Mm. And if you look at UN Women, if you look at their website, now there seems to be more about menstruation, but I think even to a couple of months ago, there was one mention of menopause. Mm. Whereas UN Women as a global collective, I think that would be a superb platform to start to get the message out about menopause, certainly as regards gender equality. And if you look at some of the sustainable development goals, I think unless we're having womb to tomb dignity, if you want to refer to it as that, then gender equality, I think, will always remain out with our grasp.
There's a Native American saying, actually, which I shared in my yoga for perimenopause and menopause class this morning, which I'll just share with you because it just seems really poignant. At her first period, a girl meets her wisdom. Through her menstruating years, she practices her wisdom. And at menopause, she becomes her wisdom. And it just resonated when you say womb to tomb, because actually there's a journey there as well. It's not, you know, it's not just the menopause journey. There's a journey from puberty forwards.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, you know, we talk about an awareness of menopause and having those discussions openly. But what we also, I think, need to be thinking about is those long term health implications, certainly of an earlier menopause. But even those, even, you know, going through the menopause at the average age in the UK of 51, but thinking about the health implications, because actually those are huge, aren't they? And those are something that is often not discussed enough. I think we're having the discussion in a way, improving that discussion around the menopause, but thinking about those long-term health implications. Is that something that you try and incorporate, Helen, in those discussions within the menopause cafes and the groups that you run?
Within the menopause cafes, because they are in essence group-directed discussions, it tends to be whatever subjects come up from those who attend. But absolutely, there's always now the focus on HRT. People want to know others' experiences of HRT, because I think it's still unfortunately seen as this, you know, this most awful evil thing, because of that that study that we now know is completely flawed. I think that's done a huge amount of damage. But thankfully, I think that the tide is definitely turning there. But yes, there is definitely more of an emphasis on self-care broadly. But what can we do in terms of looking after our bone health, our heart health and our brain health, where obviously HRT is just ticks all of those boxes, but also the other things that we can be doing. And I think that's why menopause is a great time to perhaps audit our lives, or just audit what's working for us and what isn't. And I wonder whether menopause is almost Mother Nature's way of saying, hang fire. You know, if it's not going well for you, maybe look at what you're doing and alter some of those things. So it was a really vital and timely wake-up call for me that I could not go on living the way I was, because it wasn't healthy and it wasn't sustainable. So yeah, and I write about things now because I would like others not to follow in my footsteps, because if I can avoid that happening, then I will.
We're going to pause there again just to listen to some messages from our sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Helen, it was interesting you mentioned just before the break there some other lifestyle changes or choices that perhaps you made. And for some women, they sort of get to perimenopause and think, I thought I had everything sorted. You know, I perhaps know what clothes suit me and I know what I like to eat and, you know, my hair's looking great, whatever it might be. And then suddenly these changes begin to happen. And as you mentioned earlier, some women really feel they're losing their mind. And I often cite Dr. Lisa Misconi. I love her description of estrogen being the conductor of the brain. Yeah. And I know myself, I've made quite a lot of changes over the last 3 or 4 years, and only recently started HRT actually about a month ago, because I was managing my symptoms through what I was eating, through my yoga practice, you know, just through general lifestyle choices, which weren't always easy because I've got a sweet tooth. But, you know, I was making those choices and I was able to manage them quite well. And then they just got a little bit too much. And that's when I began to explore HRT. I'm very lucky to have a sister as a GP with a special interest in menopause. And I knew it was safe. It was just navigating what version of HRT I wanted to take. But as you say, lots of other things we can do to help ourselves. Is there anything specifically that's helped you or that you enjoy doing to look after your long-term health?
Dominantly being a bit kinder to myself. I'm a big self-compassion fan now. And, you know, again, in the way that I never thought I would be running around in Lycra, I never thought I would actually say that, because it's, and this might sound slightly sort of judgmental, but for me, it was always very touchy-feely. And I'd always thought, no, that sort of thing's not for me. I don't need it. It's great for other people if it works for them, but I don't need it. And my menopause journey taught me the value of friendships, but also the value of being kind to myself and practicing self-compassion. And I'm a recovering perfectionist. So, you know, I would be really hard on myself there. And that's where self-compassion comes in. I have quite a lot of shame around some childhood issues. I was sexually abused as a young girl, and starting to deal with that after my surgery as well, that brought a lot of other stuff to the fore. And compassion-focused therapy was game-changing, really game-changing, because if I can't show myself compassion, it's very hard to show it to somebody else. So, compassion, big fan. And cold water bathing, definitely. I do like to hop into a bath full of ice cold water. It deals with hot flushes, actually. If I have an 8-minute cold water bath first thing in the morning, I can guarantee I will not have another hot flush that day, which is great.
That is amazing. So having done various, I guess, tests on yourself, you realise that is what stopped the hot flush coming. That's incredible.
It's. I mean, it was almost by serendipity, because I'd been out running, and I noticed that's something else postmenopausally. If I'm running or if I'm doing any exercise, I get really overheated and I can't cool myself down afterwards. You know, so sort of flinging all my clothes off and just trying to cool down. And the only thing that worked was, you know, before I go for a run, I fill the bath up with cold water, so that the moment I walk in the front door and I'm in,
amazing,
8 minutes doing the Wim Hof, you know, enjoying it. This is just so fantastic. And yeah, it just seems to reset my internal thermostat.
There've been quite a few studies around it actually now as well, haven't there? I know most of the studies have looked at, or quite a lot of the studies have looked at kind of low mood and depression and how cold water therapy can really, really help. But there's also evidence that helps. And so as it works for you, it's always really great to share these tips for listeners. I'm wondering how many listeners are going to want to jump into an 8-minute long cold water bath. I do a cold shower. That's something I do, which I really do enjoy. And it took a while. I started with my toes, work my way up, and now I can quite easily, either at the start of the shower or at the end of the shower, just do a blast of cold water, and it's really, really helped. And for those not living near lakes or seas, and not perhaps tempted by Helen's suggestion of a cold water bath, I can highly recommend a quick cold shower.
Absolutely. So Helen, we always sort of ask whoever's on the show, not necessarily top tips, but what if you could tell yourself a few pieces of advice looking back, maybe even before your surgery or even further back from that, it doesn't matter, but if you could tell yourself some tips, what would those tips be, and what would you want to pass on to others?
I would say to myself, know yourself, trust yourself, and be yourself. And those three come from Professor Stephen Joseph, his book on authenticity. And yeah, those three things just really would wrap it all up for me. because not being able to be myself, and by that I mean in terms of my neurodiversity, I never had the courage to just be different. I always wanted to just blend in and just, you know, fly under the radar screen. And now I'm quite happy celebrating my neurodiversity because it's who I am, and I found my tribe. But yeah, definitely, I would say authenticity. That's a biggie.
It's interesting how you sort of get to this time of life and realise that, you know, that's okay. It's taken a long time to reach that point for many women, but it's interesting how, you know, again, going back to that second spring, you realise that this is okay. It's okay to stick your head above the parapet and go, I'm going to talk about this, or I'm going to shout about it loudly, but I'm also going to accept who I am. And that's obviously, you know, not easy for many, many people for various reasons, but just being able to talk that through with yourself, I think, is really vital.
Something I'd love to pick up on as well that Helen mentioned earlier was compassion. I think that's something that's it's just really needed, isn't it? A bit of self-compassion at this time.
We also ask, don't we, all our interviewees towards the end of the interview is the vagina question, Helen.
Go for it.
So we ask, if your vagina could wear something, what would it wear? And this is going back to the Vagina Monologues play that Caroline and I saw many years ago. And I think Caroline's was a Vivian Westwood corset. We've had caftans, haven't we? I sort of am slightly envious of everyone's answer now. So my vagina is currently wearing a caftan, some gold, some diamonds, maybe Caroline's Vivian Westwood corset. But what would yours wear, Helen?
Mine would like to wear two things, if that's possible. Wellington boots. I love to be just out in a pair of Wellington boots. Obviously, other clothing, but Wellington boots. And also, I have a soft spot for tartan.
Oh,
it's an understatement. And I've got a tartan baseball cap, so I think Wellington's and a tartan baseball cap. It's a look I can carry off, I think.
Oh, it's a brilliant look. I've currently got an image of a tartan baseball cap on some wellies. That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Helen, for joining us today. We really appreciate you sharing your story and all the amazing work you're doing in your different roles, your different volunteer roles and trustee role at the Menopause Cafe as well.
Yeah,
thank you so much for the invitation.
It's brilliant, Helen. I'm in awe of all the things you're currently doing and how you're juggling it all, but it's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.